there's a song by My Chemical Romance, which most millennials likely remember, and they say it perfectly. They say love, teenagers scare the living shit out of me. And there's no lies there. Teenagers are fucking assholes. Bullying really is a massive issue, and even though we think maybe it's, you know, dissipated, it hasn't gone anywhere. I personally got bullied pretty badly when I was in elementary school, and it made me transform into a bit of an asshole when I got older. Now, I may be jokingly catty now, but I look back and I really regret some of the things I did and said as a teenager. I wish I could say that I was always nice. I usually was, but not always. Let's be real, I was a dick. And sometimes being a dick can make you cooler in high school. You know, I always chalked it up to, you know, being funny, but it really wasn't. It never is, no matter how funny we think we are. These memories, though, of being bullied still kind of haunt me to this day. Movies like Carrie and its sequel stick with me because the idea of getting revenge like that can seem badass. Don't lie, everyone has those wishes of getting back at their bullies. Now, it never would have happened because I'm far too soft, but I also don't have telekinesis like our girl Carrie White does, or her younger sister Rachel. So let's get into it. The Rage, Carrie 2. Hi, I'm Paul.
Hi, I'm Pablo, and welcome to Scared Gay,
a horror movie podcast with a gay agenda, and today we're talking about The Rage, Carrie 2.
Oh, it should be The Rage, Pablo 2, Paul.
Oh, shut up, bitch. Right. You had a good time. You had a good time. All right. So if you missed our last episode where I did a little bit of describing on what this episode and our next episode are, Pablo and I decided it would be fun to try to pick a movie that we think the other person is going to hate. Mm-hmm. So after some vetting, I chose a movie that Pablo had never seen, which was The Rage, Carrie 2. So I picked this movie for a couple of reasons. I thought Pablo would hate it. One, because he does not like movies that are centered around teenagers. Mm-hmm. He, like most people, does not like themes of like bullying, trauma, things happening to dogs. Okay, I thought that this had everything in it that Pablo would not like.
You know what? I can get past all of that. What I can't get past is Mina Suvari's fucking wig in this film. I was like, I would throw myself off a fucking building too if I got cast in that role with that wig. No.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to actually quickly use this time. Listeners, huge, huge content and trigger warnings. This movie literally touches on everything that may trigger someone. Again, it touches on suicide, sexual assault, bullying,
revenge porn, animal, like even though it's fine, but there's still like animal
cruelty,
despair.
But this is also the podcast that did a Serbian film, so obviously we do not shy away.
Yeah, wow, we are a podcast that runs the gamut. We did a Serbian film and Hocus Pocus.
Jurassic Park, too. Yeah, I mean, might as well. One day we should do The Adventures of Nemo in Slumberland. That's a little anime film, but it is honestly a horror film.
Oh, no, we can do The Brave Little Toaster. That one scared a whole generation at one point.
And then at the end of this episode, you will hear what Pablo has chosen for his, like, I don't know what we want to call this series. Like, I think in our Google Sheet, when we were putting this together, I titled it Haterade.
Haterade. Yeah, let's call this series the Haterade.
A Haterade series. All right.
Hell yeah. All right. So, Paul, tell me, how was your life for horror film this week?
Okay, so I don't really have one. However, my life was a bit of a comedy because my best friend's life was a horror movie this week.
Oh my God, what happened?
I was on the phone with her and she called, it's my best friend, Jackie. And she even said later, she's like, this is how my life was a horror movie.
Aww.
I was on the phone with her. It was late at night and she's a nurse. So she like works odd hours and she called me. It was like 10 o'clock at night and she and her husband had gone out and he was asleep and she was taking the trash out and she lives in this apartment complex in LA. So she throws her trash in like over this thing into the dumpster, continuing to talk. And then she pauses and she goes, oh no.
Oh God.
Somehow she threw her phone fell out of her pocket and went into the dumpster. That was Jackie's tall. Jackie's like 5'9", 5'8", 5'9", and it went over and above a giant ledge and her phone fell in there, but she can still talk to me because she's on her AirPods.
Oh,
so the phone's still connected. So I'm hearing Jackie try to lift herself up onto this thing and I hear her go, 1, 2, 3. And she's like, no, 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 my phone. And I'm like, you're going to have to wake up your husband to give you a lift into the dumpster. And Ryan, I guess, so she starts walking away and she's like, maybe I left it in my apartment. I'm like, would you still be connected? Walk a little further away from the dumpster. And then the AirPods start to like cut out. And then we realized, no, your fucking phone's in the dumpster. So she had to go dumpster. She woke up her husband and had to go dumpster diving. So my life was a comedy this week, but Jackie, she had to relive, I don't know, it's not a horror movie, but so the only thing I think of is the Star Wars trash compactor scene.
You were essentially Brenda watching the movie in the movie theater the whole time. I love it.
Oh, God. But yeah.
Oh, did she get her phone back?
She did.
Oh, thank God. That shit's expensive. Like, we've all been there when we lose our phone in a weird fucking place.
Walking down the streets, whenever I always see the like the grates in like the sewer and everything, and I'm like, my ass one day is going to just like fumble and drop my phone in one of those and just yes. be like, what do? I call the city of San Francisco? They're gonna be like, no, I'm gonna end up like cutting up my arm and like,
yeah,
trying to finagle
for
in
real.
And luckily my biceps are so huge that so they're big. Not gonna be able to get in.
God. Oh my God.
How about you, Bob?
Oh yeah, no, easy. My life was a horror film because I watched a movie called The Rage, Carrie.
Shut the fuck up. You fucking dramatic little bitch. And you posted that story.
I was like, wow. Yeah, oh, I'll tell you how my life is a horror film today, actually.
Ooh, recent.
Yeah, it's been a few days since my husband and I have had relations, and I was, you know.
Chris is going to love this.
Oh, no, right now, we're in the car listening to this, and he's looking at me, and he's like, I'm going to fucking kill you. So my life is going to also have a sequel to this horror film. You know, it's been like a few days. It's
the divorce, like... Carrie 3.
Fuck off. And so, you know, like, I was like, all right, we've been really busy. I was like hoping to like get some fucking lovies from my man's wet nips last night. But he was
trying to get that nookie.
Yeah, I was trying to get that nookie. But he was playing with he's playing Dungeons and Dragons with his friends. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to hit that today. I'm going to tap that ass. And I wake up to him complaining. He's like, baby, I have explosive diarrhea. So there goes my sex life today. So blue balls be growing.
You could have just bottomed. You could have been verse.
Yeah, but I like the I like the warmth of my man's booty. That's so gross. He hates me right now. He is.
This is a graphic podcast, and I love it.
Do you know what he's doing right now? He is talking to me like I'm some drunk teenage girls at the Halloween movie. Shut the fuck up!
But then he's going to give you some sloppy top. Some
oh,
little,
God.
Some...
No. No.
So you're the one who's into scat play. I thought you'd be into all this fucking explosive diarrhea.
No, I'm into it as a joke, like fucking laughing about it, not fucking into it. That's disgusting. No. But that's it. So I'm suffering and I'm
shut the
a
fuck
victim
up.
Of neglect.
Oh, God. Okay. All right. Well, let's move on. We always appreciate and love it when you all can drop us a very kind 5-star written review on Apple Podcasts. If you would be interested in writing one for us, Pablo will absolutely give you a reading of it. So what we're going to do is we're going to read this respectfully this time, Pablo. I felt bad. The last time you read it sounded like you were making fun of the review. So
oh, sorry. No.
No, it wasn't. No, we really appreciate everyone's reviews, and Pablo is the better reader at these. So I'm going to turn it over to my co-host.
Okay.
For our latest review.
me.
Spit it out.
This is from Bilmer. Stab me, daddy. Never have I wanted to be stabbed more than after listening to one of the Scared Gay podcasts. Pablo and Paul dish out thought-provoking horror movie reviews with fun and playful banter. I've loved horror movies since I was a kid, but haven't always thought about their ties to the queer community. After listening to these podcasts, I have a new appreciation for the horror genre and get more out of rewatching old horror movies, especially if they have some good eye candy like Pablo and Paul. I'm always interested to see what movies they'll be throwing shade at next. Keep the episodes coming. Thanks, Bilmer.
Thank you, Bilmer. We will keep the episodes coming, but I will not be coming anytime soon after listening to Pablo's voice.
That's not my voice. That's me channeling Bilmer. And if it's who I think it is, please take jockstrap photos and tag Scared Gay. It's a
well,
70,
thank you.
70-year-old man that I know. I'm just kidding.
Hey, I mean,
old daddy's gonna be hot.
AJ, nothing but number. I mean, you're creeping up there.
Shit, I am. Shut the fuck up.
But thank you so much, Bilmer. We really, really appreciate it. And all of our listeners, we really appreciate you listening in general, but the written reviews really, really do give us a big help. So if you're interested in having your review read by Pablo in his wispy little voice,
you should see the face that Paul just made.
Please drop us a 5-star written review on Apple Podcasts. But as always, we love you. And again, thank you, Bilmer.
That was fun. All right. Let's take it back to 1999. I just want to go back to 1999, take a ride in my old neighborhood, and we're going to talk about The Rage Carry 2. First of all, Paul, because you're the one who picked it, you knew this fucking film, I want you to tell me, when was the first time you saw this film? Tell me your thoughts.
Yeah, so the original Carry, was a staple in our household. My mom loved it. I loved it. I think on the last episode, I talked about how my mom talked about how Sissy Spacek looked like a Siamese cat and like that in that final scene. And just it was always a staple. So when this one came out, This was definitely a blockbuster rental, like very, very soon after it came out. This movie came out, I was like 10 years old. So I saw it very young and I definitely loved it. I've had different views as I've gotten older about it, but there are certain things that I really like about it. So it's relevant to this movie, but like American Pie, like a lot of the late 90s movies are some of my fucking favorites. 1999 is a banner fucking year for movies. Mena Suvari is actually in most of them.
Yeah, she's but, in so many.
But like 1999 had like all the teen movies. Like it had Can't Hardly Wait, had American Beauty, American Pie, it had this. Like
Blair Witch Project came out in 1999.
Exactly. Yes. But as far as like the teen movie, Cruel Intentions also came out in 99. They're like this was like epitome teen. Was Urban Legend 99 or was that
98? It was
98. Okay.
Yeah, but it's like it's that same era. It's the Dawson's Creek era that I like to call. Buffy was like just a big thing, like starting but a big thing, you know. Yeah.
Shout out to Buffy Gays, which also Pablo and I were on their episode for Cruel Intentions. So if you have 7.5 hours to spare
to hear a class act of a podcast get dragged through the mud by Paul and me, go check out their Cruel Intentions episode.
We love you. We love you, Kyle and Zach. They're but awesome. Do listen to Buffy Gays. I've been on there multiple times and, you know, they'll be back on soon. So, but yeah, but bit of a segue. But the 90s were a great time. So TLDR, this movie came out when I was 10 years old. I watched it when I was that age and it's a bit of a time capsule. It's very problematic, but yeah. I don't know. I have a special little soft spot for this movie.
Yeah.
How about you? When did you first see this movie?
I saw this very recently, very, very recently. I actually watched it last night. Initial thoughts. So this is the movie where teen actor dreams go to die. Great. Great. I was like, I recognize all these actors and I recognize that they didn't do anything after this.
Yes and no. Yes and no.
This movie definitely is at the cross section of the MTV generation where MTV literally ruled the aesthetic and the teen as a moneymaker powerhouse generation. Right, where everything is so teen driven, and this movie really comes at the crossroads of that, is what I my initial thoughts. I'll be honest, I watched the movie, I remember the movie, I still am like, what the fuck happened? Like, it was just kind of hard to like register it at times, so I was like, oh my god. And the whole entire time I was watching it, I kept thinking, fucking Paul. Fucking Paul. But hey, that's why we're here, right? We're here to talk about horror movies, whether they are fucking these like beautiful masterpieces or infamous films or just fun rides or shitty films. All horror film is fun at some point. We get to talk about it and enjoy it.
Exactly. And I thought, like, when I chose this, I was like, okay, it's gonna be something that's gonna be a bit of a conversation starter. While I knew that there were things that you were gonna hate about it, I also did feel like there's some things I think Pablo is going to find fun about this movie. And I think that there are very fun moments.
Oh, yeah. I do remember, I didn't watch this film until last night, but I do remember like one of my friend's older brothers was watching it one time and we like walked out of the room or we came into the house when he was watching it and it was right at the end. Certain aspects of the end of it have stayed with me and I was always like, what the fuck was that film? What the fuck was that? It's this film.
Well, I mean, this movie, it's a movie.
You are right. It it's a movie with sound and visuals. Yep.
There are some redeeming things. There are a couple of actually pretty good performances in this movie with troubled script. And I think that there's a lot of things that can explain why the movie is how it is. So yeah. I think, you know, let's get raging. Let's rage on. Rage. Let's rage.
Let's go to a killer party. It's the
dumbest line. And that line was actually originally looks like we're missing another killer party, but it for some reason got changed to one killer party, but I digress. So this movie was directed by Kat Shea, so a female director. And she was known for her Poison Ivy, the one with Drew Barrymore.
Wait, Drew Barrymore did a Poison Ivy?
I think it was Drew Barrymore.
Wait, is like Batman Poison Ivy?
No, like it was an erotic thriller in 1992.
Wait, that Poison Ivy?
Kat Shea, the director, she did this. But she was not the original director. Written by Raphael Moreau. Mm-hmm. Now, he was the original director. And they had shot for 2 weeks. And then I couldn't find exactly the reasons why. But he left production for personal reasons.
Okay.
So we'll put a pin in that and we'll come back to the reshoots and everything. All
right.
But this movie actually originally started out as an original screenplay having nothing to do with Carrie.
Yeah, you could see that.
And then they realized, oh, there's a lot of similarities, and somehow they were able to get the rights and have it be a sequel to Carrie. With that said, it was originally called The Curse. There was another title called Say You're Sorry, Carrie 2.
Oh my God. Say You're Sorry, Carrie 2.
I don't know if I kind of like that title better.
You don't know? Because I think it actually fits.
I like it more.
Fits the movie a little bit more, but Say You're Sorry, Carrie 2.
But it alternative, yeah, so it was originally called The Curse. They realized it was so similar to Carrie, and they switched it. But anyway, but the movie was released on March 12th, 1999. It had a budget of $21 million, and its box office was 17.8. So it did not do terribly well in the box office. It does not have a great critical reception. But
no.
It has developed a cult following. I think that this movie is definitely still a cult.
I can see that.
We were messaging today with Ricky of Rick or Treat podcast, he was like, I have a soft spot. There are a lot of people that like this movie, and there's a lot of things to like about it. One thing that I think that is to like is the cast. So quickly running through the cast, we have Emily Bergle as Rachel Lang, Jason London as Jesse Ryan, Dylan Bruno, not Kevin Dillon, I thought was Kevin Dillon, Dylan Bruno as Mark Bang, J. Cameron Smith as Barbara Lang, Amy Irving, the only person to reprise a role from the original Carrie, as Sue Snell, Zachary Ty Bryan as Eric Stark, Charlotte Ayana as Tracy Campbell, Rachel Blanchard as Monica Jones, Mena Suvari as Lisa Parker, Eddie K. Thomas, aka Finch / Shitbrick from American Pie, as Arnold, Clint Jordan, no relation, as Sheriff Kelton, and Sissy Spacek is Carrie White in archive footage.
Yeah, she had to give permission to use those, right? Because she turned down a role. Yeah.
Well, I mean, what role was she going to play? She's dead.
Dead.
She died.
Girl.
Yeah. Well, Amy Irving actually went to De Palma and got permission from him in order to do this role. One of the things that I think is one of the biggest travesties of this film is what they do to Sue Snell's character.
And, yes, I agree.
But we'll dive into that.
Yeah.
But we talked a little bit about how this movie originally started as like an original screenplay. One of the things it was based off of was a real life case of the Spur Posse. So there's a big plot point in this film where these jocks are having sex with girls, collecting points. That actually happened in California in the early 90s. So this film actually started like its conception in like 95, 96. It was, you know, tabled for a little while, but basically it was this group of jocks that were basically committing sexual crimes against underage girls and kind of making a game out of it. There's, you know, Lifetime movies about it. That unfortunately is something that that was kind of an inspo for this film.
I actually think that is a pretty common thing. I don't think that's so uncommon the way we think it is, right? Like the behavior of the jocks here of like, okay, you get points and kind of thinking that they're above the law and doing some stuff that's really kind of shitty. That's like sexual predator. Yeah. They're kind of like a sexual predator. Right?
It was super predatory. Yeah. I mean, I just think that like this, the Spur Posse, it like made national headlines and everything. So
yeah,
I think
for sure.
That was something that just inspired it. But yeah,
I remember hearing about that.
It's not, I'm sure it's not uncommon. Like the thing about this is there's some aspects of this film that are like very realistic. This film is all about bullying. It's about, you know, really tearing women down and, you know, really objectifying them. This movie tries to go very deep and tackle a lot of themes. It tries to tackle, I think, too many themes, but
yes,
but we'll save that for later. But yes, as I mentioned, so Kat Shea came in as the director and basically had a lot of creative changes to make. They did a lot of reshoots in 2 weeks. It was a very tumultuous filming.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually had like 2 weeks worth of footage to reshoot on top of the shooting that they had to do with the exact same deadline. So there was a lot of shit that they had to pull through. I mean, I do like the fact that they did bring in a female director for a female centric film, and you know, can't speak. I'm not a woman, but I do think that there are a lot of sympathetic things in this film that take place that I think would have only been achieved if they were directed by a woman.
I agree. There are things that would have. There's way, like Monica's character, Monica Jones,
the way
she uses her innocence to lure in Rachel's character. I was like, oh, I wouldn't have thought of that. I think that's only something that like you would think of if it's kind of an experience that you have where you know the insidiousness of using your like female innocence, like the perception of your female innocence to hurt another woman.
Well, it's very catty.
Yeah.
I have a lot to say about Monica's character.
Well, and just that she wears glasses.
She's the only popular girl to have glasses and a ponytail. Her hair is never down. She's in glasses and a ponytail.
Yeah,
she's still considered
a popular girl. The actress is beautiful and she does do beautiful. Like she always plays a beautiful character. But
she was in Model Behavior with Justin Timberlake. That's a deep cut from Disney Channel.
But she, they actually frump her up to look less, right? Like less like a
yes
hot
and
girl.
No, yes and no. But they still make her look like a hot girl. But yeah. We'll get into that when we talk about her. But let's go into some of the characters. We're only going to touch on. Okay. We'll kind of group some of these in together. Let's talk about Rachel. Emily Bergel, I'm going to say it right off the bat, killer performance. I think that she's a great actress. We don't see her in a lot. Like people remember her from like Gilmore Girls. She was on Desperate Housewives and she usually plays kind of kooky characters. I really like her performance. I think that she does the best that she can with a shitty script. There's a couple of scenes where I'm like, oh, but I really enjoyed her performance, and the character of Rachel is very, very heartbreaking and sympathetic. But what do you think?
Everyone is written so one note that the entire time I was watching this, I was like, I kept thinking of the people and the characters in the Molly Shannon genius film Superstar. Yeah, I was like, that's all I kept thinking watching this. Okay, I guess she does a good job. There's not, and you're,
you don't think the actor does a good job?
No.
Oh, really? I think she's the saving grace of the film.
No, I don't think she does a good job. She has a line delivery where I'm like, oh, she said that really off. What's hard is the writing, the cinematography, the editing. It's kind of hard to see if she does a good job or what, right? Because I don't know, it just seemed a little flat. Like, and her character isn't bad. Like, I agree with you. Like, her character is written to be like someone who's kind of beat down a lot. But it's just kind of weird that that's what I don't know. It was just like, this is, they're trying too hard.
Interesting.
They're trying too hard to make another version of Carrie White. Like, it's really obvious.
But like an edgier one, I guess. Okay. So I think I don't want to retract my statement completely, but yeah, you do bring up a good point. I think the actor does a good job with what she's given. I think Emily Bergel is a really good actress. And I think that there are times where you really feel for Rachel. But yes, I am also off the top of my head thinking of a handful of line deliveries that I'm like, but I'm gonna give her the benefit of the doubt, and I'm gonna blame that on the script a little
bit.
Honestly,
what I think it is, I think it was a miscast. This is what it feels like to me. I think
who would you have liked to see?
She looks too mature for what they're trying to get. And I think that's kind of the problem. It's hard. Like, I can't think of anyone. Maybe the actress that played Jan Brady in the Brady Bunch film. Like, maybe her.
Shut the fuck up.
Like, no. And like, I know it sounds like I'm joking, but I'm like, I can't really think of like anyone that could be a role like this. Because I'm so far removed from like the 1999 days, but I think why it kept taking me out is she to me looks 20 years older than anybody else, and that
okay, that that I'll give you, yeah,
that took me out. Like, her hair job was like way too severe. Like, there was like a lot, right? And I was like, okay. You know who would have been great? Like, Thora Birch. She was in American...
Oh, I know exactly who Thora Birch is.
Yeah, she would have been, like, great for this, right? Like, it would have made more sense. Because I think what they were also trying to do, this is my sense, is they wanted her to also be looked at as, like, well, she's actually, like, a hot girl. Like, they wanted to do stuff like that with her. And why Sissy Spacek worked so well in Carrie is, one, she was young. She was closer to Carrie's age.
No, but she wasn't. She was, like, 28.
Shut the fuck up.
Sissy Spacek was, or, like, she was definitely, hold on.
Well, the thing with Sissy Spacek that really sticks out is Sissy Spacek has such unique features. So unique. That when you like frump her up, they make her look wet and a little sad in comparison to everyone else. Like, it can be really drastic. And when you pretty her up, she takes makeup very well. She lights up, right? Sissy Spacek has that ability to do that. And this actress, I don't think, has the ability to do that to that extreme.
And I think that this character was probably written to be a little bit more edgy. And yes, I looked it up. Sissy Spacek was born in 1949. And the movie came out in 1976. So she was like pushing 30.
She was like mid-20s when she made the film.
When the film was made, she was like 26.
Yeah. Well, but
and she thing, but yeah. But regard, but I think Sissy Spacek has just a little bit more of like a timeless kind of look to her. And then they tried to make, what annoyed me was they tried to make her this like goth edgy kind of person, but then when she's like she like wants to be this like, she wears like periwinkle dresses when she's trying to like impress him, and they give her a lot of like the like Sandra D from Grease, yes, like vibe where she totally changes herself. That part of the character I don't like, no, is yeah, that she seems like this hard ass, and she has some badass lines in this that I fucking love, but then she also is very like, oh, a boy paid attention to me, I'm gonna, you know, I feel like I'm backtracking of like some of my initial thoughts on this, but the character, it's not, I actually would disagree with you on that it's one note. There's multiple one notes. It's just they're all scattered over the place.
I won't say, I'll say everyone is pretty much one note. She's the only one that isn't, just because we get to see more of her world. But it's flat. Like everything about that they present is just kind of flat. And like what someone perceives an edgy girl would do.
But she knows how to give looks. Like in the scene, I will say I was fucking rooting for her, and like that end scene I think is pretty
bad. Yeah, for sure. No. Like the end scene definitely, but I was just like, all right. But out of everyone, she's the most dynamic character.
Let's go on to Jesse Rye. Jeremy London of Dazed and Confused fame. Yes.
He's fine.
He chaps my ass. He's fucking Gap sweater wearing motherfucker. Like I found his character to be the most insufferable, because he's an asshole. He's still participating in all of these awful fucking things, and he's just like, but like chip on his shoulder, like he is probably the most archetype 90s teen movie character, because he's the I don't want your life kind of character.
For all of the Bravo fans out there, he's the Tom Sandoval of this whole entire thing. Because okay, let's actually go into what he's doing. He's kind of leading this girl on and then being a dick to her and flaunting this other girl in her face, hurting her feelings, and then not understanding why other people are such a bitch to this other girl. Like, he is so out of touch with his actions, and he's not like mending fences or being like, hey, listen, it's over between us. We're not friends. I'm not gonna be hanging out with you, talking to you about the girl that I am dating now. Like, what a piece of shit to do that. More, he's doing that to that poor, like, quote unquote popular girl who's, you know, hides behind fucking vanity. But really,
well, yeah, he treats her like shit too. Yeah. The Liz from Jawbreaker.
yeah, he treats her like total fucking shit. And like in a weird way, I felt bad for her, because I was like, yeah, I'd be pissed off too. Some guy literally blew me off, flaunted it in front of everyone, and then still treated me like we were friends, and like was like, oh, I met this girl. Let's go meet up with this girl. What the fuck, dude? Like, this is a dumbass.
I mean, she is also a psychopath, but no, I guess
she's a mean girl for sure.
But she is caviar, and Rachel is cheese whiz.
My God. It's like, I was actually watching a housewife, and she was like, I am Beyonce, and she is mashed potatoes with no butter. It was so good.
I'm just going to say, no one in this film is Gone with the Wind fabulous.
No one. No one. Not even close. But speaking of...
maybe Walter the dog.
But he's the only one.
Well, and then let's move on to... I kind of just want to group Like,
yeah,
the three, I feel like there are three villains in this. It's Mark Bing, Monica Jones, and Eric Stark. So not Kevin Dillon, Monica Jones, dude, the girl Bing with glasses.
Is huge, muscular, and huge for a high schooler. I was like, the fuck?
I knew guys like that. I knew guys like that in high school, though. Like, I went to high school with, like, a big foot, like, this, like...
Yeah, but he's also, like...
He's also, like, 40.
Yeah, like, it's like okay, they were like, we need a really muscular guy that looks young. That 38-year-old looks young for his age. He could play a high school football.
Pablo, but this is 1999. This is the peak era of casting people that have... That are, like... are creeping up on AARP memberships to play fucking middle schoolers.
For sure, like, yeah. One minute they play a high schooler, the next minute they play someone's, like, middle-aged DILF dad. Yeah.
I mean, Mark was hot, but like, it was also... I don't know. But he's scary. Like, he is scary, and he's... The thing about this film, though, is what's unfortunate is there are so many themes that take place, particularly around sexual assault and boys will be boys and, like, boys club, that really ring true today.
Oh, that was very, I was like, wow, this is really topical.
And that's why I actually think it was pretty smart of them to cast Zachary Ty Bryan of Home Improvement fame to play the, you know, the don't tarnish his reputation jock. That is, that you almost in the beginning, they almost try to make him a sympathetic character in the very beginning, which we'll get into. But I did think it was smart casting, because I think this was like his first like adult. I mean, I think this was one of his like only real things outside of Home Improvement.
Well, but, he was in
what else was he in other than Home Improvement?
I'm trying to find it, but I remember
Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift.
Yeah, well, he was in a film around this time that was like
True Heart.
It was like a made for TV Lifetime film about a high school jock that was taking steroids.
Oh my god.
Wow, we are going way back.
We were doing some Promise fucking land. deep cuts.
With
he was also in First Kid, but he was like a child, like, and he was cute and everything. But he actually, that I will say, funny. I think that as an actor, I think Zachary Ty Bryan does a great job in this role of being that like fucking asshole. I think he is a scarier character than the unhinged Mark. Zach, I think, gives a little bit, there's enough of charm about him, yeah. And all American, like whatever all American means, like quote unquote all American boy vibes, that makes him scarier.
Okay, I can see that. Yeah, I can see that. But he's no Monica Jones.
Okay, Rachel Blanchard, I think she is my MVP in this movie, because no, she
steals the scenes. She eats it up when she's on camera.
And like, and how, and I'm going to save some of the stuff that I want to say about her until we actually do the breakdown, because it's just, she has some of the cuntiest lines, and she wears glasses and has a ponytail. Like, that is what we always talk about 90s movies, of like ugly girls being like, they have glasses and a ponytail. And she's one of the popular girls, and she's one of the conniving ones. She's definitely supposed to be like a, like the PJ Souls kind of. Yes,
exactly. She's the PJ, yeah.
But she also is like the Chris Hargensen of the original movie too. One thing I don't understand, so there's that, so the girl Tracy and Monica just kind of comes in the like half part of the second act,
yeah,
and has so much animosity towards Rachel, to where like I feel like there have to have been scenes that were missing. There was no real backstory. Should have been the same character. Maybe
she came out of nowhere. What actually might have I think a great way to fill in the gaps is she might, she like her backstory should have been she was friends with Rachel in high school and then became popular.
That, or if she and Tracy were, or if she was the one that was actually with Jesse.
Maybe.
Like, it's just, it doesn't make sense why she is so evil.
Why she's so mean.
Right? Or, my headcanon, she is lusting after Tracy and wanting to get in Tracy's good graces. But, like, she just, some of the shit she pulls is just fucking.
Yeah. Well, every popular girl has, like, I mean, the trope is one popular girl, two henchmen, right? And this one is just one henchman, which is Monica Jones.
But Monica, I think she's my favorite character.
I know. Yeah, she kind of really is.
Now let's.
I really fell in love with her in the department store scene.
Because she was stealing things like yeah. You did in she Modesto.
Like, hi. She's like so friendly. I was like, oh my gosh, she's like a good person. She's so friendly. Oh, she's bad. She steals. I love her.
So let's move on to Sue Snell. This fucking pisses me off.
Why?
They brought the queen herself, Amy Irving, back.
Yeah.
This character, like, it makes no sense. And she also is, like, supposedly this expert on Carrie's telekinesis. How?
My question is, how does she know that it's a genetic disorder passed on through the father?
And how did she know for sure that Carrie was dealing with her powers? And that's all. Like, it's just, this is a Swiss cheese of plot holes.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Also, we do have another minor character, but I think the most disgusting, ugly character, her fucking tattoo.
I was like, oh, I thought you would have liked it.
What? That is the ugliest fucking tattoo. And it's so weird, the tattoo going through, like, around her body. Rachel's tattoo.
Oh, let's talk about that when we get to that scene, because I have a lot. I have a lot to say about that, and I think you and I are going to completely disagree.
Okay.
All right.
Let's dive into The Rage, Carrie 2. The movie opens up on a very dramatic scene of a woman.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Okay. This is wild. She's fucking like painting her apartment red and she's like lost her marbles.
But it's just like one stripe around. It's like, this is some weird, like, this looks like a TikTok thing.
Oh, shit. Yeah, it does. It's like a TikTok Christian parenting. No, for real. And then, you know, we have this cute little girl that's like, mama. And this cute little puppy dog, this hound puppy dog that's like,
mm. Little basset hound.
Yeah. You know. But, okay. So, like, the tone is set. It's a parallel what's happening in this movie to Carrie. They really are heavy-handed with how much they want to remind you Carrie is a movie and we're the second part.
Religious mom that's like crazy little girl that is. One thing that this movie does do differently is that they actually, it does harken back to the source material. In the book, we learn that Carrie has been dealing with her psychic, like, her telekinetic powers, like, her whole life. There's a whole scene about, and that happens when she's little, where she makes stones rain down. But This movie does show the psychic powers are there kind of, like, early on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right. And the mom gets taken away, and you know, it sets up the abandonment issue.
It's really sad.
Anywhere, of course. Yeah, it's sad. You know, back in the day, no one would CPS wouldn't have taken the child away.
Now, but what's really funny? I know that it's not funny. It's not funny. No, but I know it's not funny. But when little Rachel's like, "Mom, let's play," and her mom slaps her in the face with a paintbrush. I'm sorry. I hate that I laughed, but I laughed because she's just like, "Shut the fuck up."
Yeah,
I'm busy. I'm busy, redecorating.
Right. Well, and it's also like pointing to something, right? Like the red, right? Menstrual blood, flowing menstrual blood, because that's one of the big themes that, I mean, even at this point, everyone knew about Carrie. It was about the latent powers of female sexuality, females' bodies changing. And so what a way to symbolize, you know, the changing female body than to fucking paint red everywhere, you know?
There are two main colors in this whole movie, red and periwinkle. And I will call out,
they do black and white a lot in this movie.
Okay, the black and white. Okay, so yeah, we can touch on that now, because like, so little Rachel goes in and they use the black and white shots of like her powers start going off and she's yelling stop it, but we get a lot of black and white shots throughout this. Pablo, I need you to help me make up my mind, because I don't know if I think they're really cool or if I fucking hate them. And I go back and forth with this use of black and white shots and not, like, it feels okay. So 90s music video.
Yes.
But I don't know. I don't know if I hate it or I don't know if I actually really like it.
Here's my take on it. I think the problem with the black and white shots is that it's used way too much. They use it like every 5 fucking minutes. And I'm like, oh my God.
But just for her powers, I guess, right?
Yeah, but her powers are going off everywhere. But it's also not just her powers. So, like, they use the black and white. And I'm trying to think, what is it that you're trying to do with it? Because she also uses the black and white, or the cinematography also goes to black and white when she's like having a nightmare and she's like envisioning stuff, right? So it's like, okay, so is black and white supposed to be the moments where Carrie is like emotionally charged, right? Where it's like really like pushing her over the edge. Is that what we're seeing? But there's no continuity that throughout it, because, like, you know, it shows the certain like things breaking, things shattering when it happens. But then it also shows when it also comes out when she's having like fantasies or, you know, nightmare dreams, or to show that there's chaos happening. Like, there's no continuity with it. So I think it would be a really cool touch. I would have liked it, but I don't think it was used correctly. And so I think that's maybe they why used it's hard it. To figure out whether
you... I think maybe they used it too much, like, because there are times when it's cool and it works. Like, I actually think maybe the only time that I think that it really works, that I'm like sitting there and thinking like, okay, this is cool, is in the very beginning. When she's a little girl and she's walking through and the stuff is slamming behind her and it's in black and white when she's a little girl. And then there's a couple of things at the very end in the final scene, which we'll get to.
Yeah.
But other than all the stuff that happens in the middle when they use it, I think is like, it's trying too hard.
It doesn't tell anything. Right. And then when they show the archival footage, I guess you can say, of Carrie, the movie, it's in like red. And I'm like, okay, so you're using colors, but what are you trying to tell us? Like, what is the point of this? So it's actually just a stylistic choice without anything. Great.
Yeah.
Then it's not necessarily working. It's just going to confuse us.
They could have done something cool with it. Because like I said, I think that image of her as a little girl walking back into the house, things are closing behind her, it's in black and white, like, I like that because that shows heightened emotion. And I know that that's always, every time they do in the black and white, yes, it's always supposed to be Rachel has some sort of heightened emotion. But the only times for me that it works are in the beginning and the end. And I really do like it in,
yeah,
particularly with the scene of when she's a little girl.
But
there's just something that kind of
makes sense. The end is Rachel in full heightened emotion, and that's not in black and white.
There are flashes.
So why?
That's why I think the flashes work. And it's, you're right, because it's just stylized. And of
so, like that's, I'm like, it. So what it does is it's like a jump scare. You give us a good jump scares are fine in and of itself. You give us a good jump scare, fucking amazing, right? Like, cool. Like, this was a good jump scare. You got me. You give us a few more that are awesome and great and appropriate and sprinkled throughout. Fuck, this is a great film. This is scary. It's got us involved. You give us a jump scare that's just like the cat and then the friend, and then we're like, okay,
yeah,
there's no danger. There's nothing to be afraid of. Like, this is stupid.
Totally. I think maybe it's just those music video moments that I like.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of like Stigmata. I was like, this is a very music video heavy film.
Ugh, I hope you didn't pick Stigmata for us to do next week, because no. That is a movie I do not enjoy.
No.
And I don't think I even have fun time talking shit about it.
No.
It's just snooze fest.
No. Yeah. So, you know, that, you know, they're just setting up that, the, you know, she's been troubled and she's had these psychic things and, you know, she's a complex family. Yeah, Mina Suvari, which I don't know if part of me was like,
okay, is her
Lisa,
outfit.
Is Lisa played by Mina Suvari, or is Lisa the wig and the only person that they could hire to move the wig around to puppeteer the wig was Mina Suvari?
Well, this was the year of Mina Suvari. So we have her, like, this is the only film she starred in that movie that I think that did not have the word American in the title, because yes, she was in American Beauty, American Pie. Most people American know her from American Story. Pie. No.
She's in American Horror Story, season one.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying American Horror Story was not in 1999. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying that, like, she gets a lot of American titles throughout her career.
American actress, Mina Suvari.
But I actually really liked this role. I liked Mina Suvari being in this role, because I remember when I saw this movie, I had already seen American Pie. So I knew her from American Pie, and then she was also in American Beauty that same year,
which it was like and a the, stellar film,
right? Well, and she was also in Sugar and Spice, but I think that came out the year later.
I fucking love Sugar and Spice. I bought it and I was like, Chris, no, you don't understand. We're watching this damn film. And he was like, all right.
on our Patreon that we create one day, we'll do non-horror movies and we can talk about Sugar and Spice. Sugar and
Spice. Jawbreaker.
Jawbreaker directly relates to this movie because Liz is in it.
When I was in Mexico at Peaches' wedding, Darren Stein, who wrote and directed Jawbreaker, was there. We got to hang out.
And you didn't try to get him on the podcast?
Oh, trust me. We became friends.
But what I was going to say, so Mina Suvari, she was in Sugar and Spice, but like, for me, this was my Drew Barrymore in Scream moment when I saw this when I was a little kid, because I was already, I had zero supervision, as our listeners at this point have now heard me say it ad nauseum. I was allowed to watch movies that I was far too young to watch. One of them was American Pie, which is one of my favorite movies. She dies early on, a spoiler in a second, but I like that was like a Drew Barrymore like moment. Like I feel like she at the time was one of the bigger names, and to lose her as early as we do,
yeah,
is pretty.
Yeah, she's not in it very quickly. She's not in it at the very beginning. She's just in it for a bit, you know, and she's drowned out by a fucking
wig. That fucking wig. And then
I'm
also there,
who did they, what, how many drag queens did they fucking piss off that now they had no access to good wigs?
The 90s were not a good time for wigs. I mean, this is right up there with Jamie Lee Curtis in Halloween 2. Oh, actually, well, I think this usurps that. I think,
yeah,
this one's worse.
This one was I think the little girl from Crazy Town has a better fucking wig. The show.
I think if I go to Party City, I can get a better wig.
Oh my god. I feel like if I can roll around in the lint under the couch, I'll have a better fucking wig.
And then this is also so true. They're these like underage kids, they both have these matching tattoos. Yeah. And like, I get it. Rachel's in the foster care system. They're like edgy kids. But it was very, very rare for teenager, like underage kids to have tattoos in high school. When did you get your first tattoo? Okay.
There were a few kids that had tattoos in my high school.
But I didn't get the sense that they had had them for a long time.
Yeah.
I don't get the sense that they were both already 18 when they got these tattoos.
No. Oh no. And they're not 18 in the movie either. Right. Like they're young, but like I knew kids in high school that got tattoos at like 14 or 16 or 15.
Oh yeah. They say that she's 16, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, which is why they're like, okay, you know.
Because we meet all the boys.
Yeah.
We meet all the popular, the spur posse crew.
Of the fucking movie.
And okay. I have to say.
Say it.
The line that they have where it's like a coyote date where you gnaw off your arm. Yes. I'm sorry. I know that that's awful.
How many times has that happened to you? Where you wake up.
Too many, yeah. Where I'm like, ugh. But also, I don't know how many times I've been the coyote date.
Not you.
But also, like, by today's standards, that would be the, like, 127 hours. Like, because that's...
Yeah. Well, okay, so we learn that Lisa had lost her virginity the night before. Oh, she lost it, but she kept the box it came in. So Lisa,
what the fuck?
Yeah, she loses her virginity, and she gives Rachel a roll of film that she has to develop, right?
Because this is a snapshot to the 90s, where there was 1 hour photo. You had to get your film developed, which also gives me so much anxiety. This is why revenge porn is so much easier now, even though it takes place in this film later, because you didn't have people developing your fucking pictures. Because can you imagine taking a dick pic, being like, and or working at Walgreens and developing film and being like, Jim, we got another one with a dick next to a Coke can. Jim, we got another one next to with a dick next to a Comcast remote, like
next to a fucking half eaten Tic Tac,
and it still looks small.
Bing. Yeah. So
we're not size queens.
No,
this just me.
Girl, she gave it up.
She gave it up, and then Zach Ty Bryan. We learned that they had like fucked, and then like. So they're like, his friends are making fun of her, and he's like, oh yeah, because they were gonna like, he actually liked her.
Yeah.
And he wanted to, and again, this is where we start to try to like Zachary Ty Bryan's character, because he's gonna like actually meet up with her during lunch. And this part is heartbreaking, because we've all had that guy that like you really like, and then he's like, later he refers to her as just a pump.
Yeah.
And just a nut, which I know a lot of people on the internet that would like to just be referred to as just a bump.
Oh, I know a lot of people that are like, they are self-identified, not humans, but just a pump and a nut.
Just a hole, sir.
Yeah, just a hole. Barely even a heartbeat. Fun times. Fun times.
And we say that we are not yucking anybody's yum. We are not yucking anybody's yum.
I
that
just
is
know
a kink.
That, like, but... that's what they fucking want, and like that's what they want to be talked to. So I'm like,
but whatever. Unfortunately, she did not want to be that, and she jumps off of a roof. And
in the slowest walk, that also, holy shit, she lands on that car window shield face fucking first.
Okay.
I was like, okay, oh my god, walk in the room face first. Like, holy shit.
But then she jumps off the roof, and then there's this one girl on the roof who's like,
to her friends, almost laughing, me like, did you just see the shit?
Okay, that was fucking good. And
all
the-
I was like, that's me going, oh my god.
And I'm the other girl. Shit? I'm the other girl just fucking planting a cucumber, being like, wait, what? What happened? No, what? What happened?
Up there doing that because it's part of my fucking detention. Because I'm like, why the fuck during lunch would I be on a roof? Yeah. Like,
gardening.
But also, she knew what she was doing because she took her homework and loose leaf paper is just fly everywhere. And then when she jumps, though, it is not, she does this like crucifix thing, but you can totally tell it is not Mina Suvari and Mina Suvari's wig.
No.
It's absolutely not a stunt double.
Yes.
And then when it falls, and that is like a fucking, it is a crazy smash into a car. People don't freak out enough about it, I don't think. But then when you look at her, you're like, this is, Mina Suvari had to leave to go shoot American Pie.
Yeah.
Because that is a dummy.
That is one of those fucking CPR dummies, and they just attach some fucking arms to it. Yeah.
I just can't get over that girl. It's just like, did you fucking see this shit?
Her reaction was so good. So up until this point, I will say this movie was so hard for me to get into that I just could not get into it. I was like, nope. Until not Mina Suvari, until that girl be like, oh God, holy shit, did you see that? Until that part. Then I was like, I need to be watching this. I like this girl.
Unfortunately, we never see her again.
No.
And then also, so she falls, and then Sue Snell goes, okay, and I will ask you more about this later because of your psychology background. Worst school counselor ever. God. The fact that Rachel gets close enough to her to where she can touch her blood.
Yeah.
Also, how heartbreaking is that? Your best friend. Your only friend. And
don't you fucking listeners jump off a fucking bridge, because I would be wrecked. I couldn't handle it.
Listeners, no dick is worth hurting yourself.
Not
over.
Even ZTB. Come on. Especially ZTB.
Especially ZTB. No, like, the only time you should let a dick hurt you is consensually. Jinx. Yeah. But it is heartbreaking because she goes from such a, like, she's so excited because she's like, I met this guy.
Yeah.
I lost my virginity. This movie, though, does so play into this purity culture and like how, like, let's be honest, losing your virginity is not
virginity's a fun. Construct.
It's a construct, yeah. And it's not fun. Like, it's like, I mean, yes, it can be, but it's awkward, and people are like, "Oh, I want it to be beautiful," and like, I don't know, maybe I'm jaded in my like times, like, and I have scattered virginities that I lost over time. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a big theme of this film, is like this like purity culture. And even Rachel, she's like, later she's like, I want flowers and all this stuff. Yeah, and it's like, no girl, you want an orgasm.
It still
like
gets
that's
into it, right? It still gets into it. But yeah, Sue Snell just fucking, someone runs in and is like, a girl could have killed herself. And she's like, what? And like, almost pushes the girl she's helping out. She's like, get out the way.
Also,
she reminds me of Buffy from when she wins the prize in fucking Scary Movie. And she's like, oh, get out of my way, loser.
The girl's sitting there crying, being like, I have to have an abortion.
Yeah.
And then also, the door's open. Like, what sort of therapy session is taking place?
I know. She's doing it right at the doorway. also.
But she's like kneeling down, and then she's, you're right. That is such a good way to get out of my way, loser. She basically pushes the girl out of the chair
and runs in she's the other like, direction. Ah! And they sprint. It's fucking hilarious.
And the girl's like, what the fuck do I have to do? Jump off a roof?
Girl, maybe if you want to get that abortion, right? I mean, yeah.
It depends on which state you're in.
Exactly. There were backward states back then. Well, when, you know, when she sees her friend, this is when we see, like, I actually thought this was really cool. The lockers exploding because
right.
Rachel has that psychic, like, tantrum. Like, duh! I thought that was fucking cool. It was just a cool scene.
I did like it too, and it's hard, and you know, Rachel, like, this is the only person she has, although later she kind of has Finch. I'm gonna refer to him as Finch, just
yeah,
that's
I don't even
how
remember
I know.
His name. And I remember, like, he looks like that one guy. Yes, it's Finch.
People used to tell me that I looked like him, and I got pissed. Oh. Although I love this character. Although
well,
I do
bitch,
love this
you know what people used to tell me I looked like in junior high? Skeeter
ugly.
From Doug.
Okay, that's racist.
Yeah, I was like, what? I was like, everyone else is getting like these characters.
Although,
and I'm getting
although,
a cartoon character.
Although, Pablo, I'm really sorry.
You see it? I know. Okay. My cousins, all of my cousins were like, you know who you look like, Pablo?
I can't unsee it. I can't unsee it.
All my cousins used to tell me I look like Donkey from Shrek. When I would smile, I was like, what?
No, that I don't see, no. But I don't think I can unsee
Skeeter from Doug, for sure. Shut the fuck up. Sue Snell, the counselor, the worst counselor. She's more traumatized than the fucking kids. I feel like every kid that comes in, Sue Snell is like, you think you have it bad? Let me tell you about my best friend in high school, Carrie White.
That I fucking threw tampons at. And
yeah.
and then we get the sheriff who comes up. He's like, are you sure you're not trying to save some girl from... Well, I guess he says that later. But I just want to bring him up because I think he's really hot.
Yeah, he was actually really handsome. Sheriff.
And we...
Stittle or whatever.
Something. I don't know. The actor's name is Clint Jordan.
Yeah,
no relation.
He was handsome. But, you know, Sue Snell, like, talks to fucking Rachel. And she's like, I spent time in a sanitarium, the same one your mother's at. Are you psychic? And, like, the fucking coffee cup explodes.
Well, it doesn't explode yet. It slips on her lap.
Yeah, it gets, like, pushed. Right? And she notices Rachel didn't push it. Push it. Rachel didn't push it. Push it. No, Rachel didn't.
Push it good.
Ew. Pussy good? Pushy good?
No, push it good.
So
push it.
Right?
Push it good.
So let's go to that night. That night, Eric and Mark are together and they go to pick up the roll of film because
this is my my favorite line of the film is coming up.
Yes. Eric tells Mark that they have the roll of film and the cops were there and they were starting to ask.
And there's a picture
together.
Of Lisa and Eric together.
So he's like, let's go get the film. And so Wendy goes and gets the film. It's so funny because he's trying to like pick up on Rachel. And what's her fucking response? I know what line you're saying. I love this line.
She leans in. Dramatically, because he's like, oh, I'll, like, can I pay you $20 for the film? And she's like, no, it's not your film. And he's like, how about this? I'll take you and I'll drive you around. And then like offers to slip her some D. And then he's like, you know, you want me. And
yeah.
I don't. Like, why not? She puts her elbows down. Mm-hmm. She leans in, mm-hmm. and she goes. Because I'm a dyke.
Love, because she calls herself a dyke. Hey, empowerment. I love it. Girl riot. Fuck yeah, bruh. Fuck yeah. So.
And And I love that Jesse just starts laughing because he knows that she's kidding.
Yeah. She's rejecting him and he's laughing, right? It's funny. And, you know, she's done. But what happens is Sue Snell goes and visits Rachel's mom in the sanatorium. And she's talking to her, which, by the way, I like this actress. This actress is a pretty good actress. She plays Samerlot's mom in True Blood, the shapeshifter.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
The like something Mikens, the Mikens family. Yeah. But anyway, we find out that Carrie's real dad is Ralph White.
Does she find out this early?
Yeah, she finds out pretty early. And she's like, no. And it's so scary.
And also, Ralph White apparently is just all about crazy religious bitches.
Yeah, crazy religious bitches. And
which I guess may make sense if he was like a televangelist. Like,
was he a televangelist?
In my headcanon, he is.
You mean a telekinesis? Telepath?
Okay.
Telekinetic.
Okay, so here's one thing that's
mm-hmm.
in the book, what's different. I'm pretty sure, and it's been a while, but I'm pretty sure in the book, they say that it is a recessive gene, but it comes down from the mother's side, which is a huge plot hole.
Yeah.
In this film, but yeah. I digress.
Yeah, so I mean, we find out now there's a connection to Carrie. It's her widow sister. That sucks. All right, so let's talk about the dog getting hit by a car. I do want to talk about that because that one's coming up. First of all, that dog got run over by fucking 5 wheels. Seriously, 5 fucking tires. And the dog, it's obviously a fake dog because when Rachel picks up the dog after it like got out, got hit by a car, the dog is like,
it's fine.
It's sort of, and it's like no one told the dog how to act. So the dog's just like looking around for the owner, you know? And it's funny because like the dog is laying on the street. So it's like, okay, we need to make sure that the dog is laying there. The dog isn't flat. I'm happy, but it's like obvious, like 5 fucking tires. And then she picks it up and the dog is literally like when I pick up Debbie, just like hanging out, licking its lips like, hey. I thought that was hella funny. But who do we run
into? They fucking, like, that's like the craft, like.
Yeah.
Where the guy is run over. Like, they fucking run the fuck over this dog. This dog would be
pulverized.
D-E-A-D.
Pulverized. Like, they go over its head and its fucking stomach. Like, with every wheel in the fucking car. This dog
and then it's
dead.
A fucking Looney Tunes basset hound that's just like, woo, woo, woo,
yep,
woo,
totally
woo,
fine
woo, woo, I'm fine.
Right, which is cute. Like, the dog is hella cute. And as this is happening, Jesse's getting his dick wet with Tracy.
And his friends are watching. What the fuck
They're
is
watching
this?
Watching and cheering it on. And, like, she doesn't fucking care. She's like, mm.
And that bothers me that it's just like, they're, like, there's also part of me that's like, Tracy wants, so like, we make Tracy a villain, but Tracy's also, she's a point.
She's a victim too.
It just irks me, but it also shows what such a fucking cunt she is. Cause when he's like, don't you care that someone died today? But also don't you, you're over here getting your dick wet, but whatever. And then she fucking says the cuntiest thing ever. Cause she's like, she wasn't anybody.
Dude. Like, I knew girls like that in high school. Like, there are always girls like that. They grow out of it. I think most people grow out of, like, a callousness because it's, like, a little bit of self-centeredness. But I knew girls like that in high school.
Well, I said, bit like I said in my intro, like, I mean, I was, like, really badly bullied when I was a little kid. And I definitely, like, in my life have done, mainly in my teens, I did some really mean and said some really mean things. To make myself look cooler.
Yeah, same. Or
which, while usually they were really funny, but they were mean. they were mean.
It doesn't take away the
humor. I'm kidding. I'm making a joke about it now, yeah. But it wasn't. Yeah. I did some mean thing. Yeah. Hopefully that would have been her arc.
Yeah.
Maybe not. I don't really care. Fuck Tracy. Yeah. Tracy's a cunt.
Fuck her. Like, no one cares. But, yeah. So, like, taking Rachel to go see, to take the dog to the vet, which the dog is fine, like 100% fine, nothing wrong.
Can we also talk about the fact that we live in San Francisco, we both have pets. Mm-hmm. I'm not confident that I know of a 24-hour vet clinic, let alone in this fucking, not only do they have a 24-hour vet clinic, they also have a 24-hour diner that are right
next to each other.
What is this town? I think it's supposed to take place in Maine.
I know. There are a few. I think when you have a dog, you're more likely to know where the 24-hour vet clinics are, because dogs, you have to take them for walks. They get into shit.
But are there any in San Francisco that you can think of?
Yeah. The SPCA has a 24-hour vet clinic. Because it's like it's an emergency vet clinic. They have a few.
Dixon, I'm sorry, but I don't know where.
Well, I mean, it's a cat. You don't necessarily, you know, you're fine, right? But yeah,
But all I'm saying is that they play this off like it's a very rural town that would not have a 24-hour vet clinic. And that I also, my mind, I'm like, he picks her up. Does he also know exactly where this is? Because this was before the time of this was in the time of Thomas guides.
Yeah.
Like, this was before iPhones.
Yeah, right.
Where you could be like, where's the closest one?
It's not like she's fucking looking through the yellow pages either. But I mean, I'm sure she knows it, right? So they go and they hang out. They talk about the band Garbage. Okay, that was kind of very random.
Because Shirley Manson, she rocks.
And they're good.
Rad, rad.
And then football people find out Rachel's given the photo away, so they decide to fuck her up in her house.
Well, they give it, so she gives the photo to the sheriff and all of them, and it exposes kind of this sex ring.
Yeah.
Which Sue Snell had already been kind of like suspecting.
Yeah.
And this begins the whole Brock, whatever the fuck his name is. Like, I just think of, like, all of this. Boys' names will be tarnished. But they find out that she fucking released it. And also, I feel like she should have just, this narrative could have been, let me give this to her parents and her parents can release it.
Well,
I feel like she's underage. I feel like she's underage.
Like, how do they know right away that she released it, right? Like, this is evidence of something kind of bad. Someone died here. So that's kind of a weird plot point. You know? And so, yeah, they, like, go to her house. They, like, harass her. And then they leave when her foster parents come home. And then what happens? They're mad at her. What's this brick doing here?
But I love that she's just like, how am I supposed to know? She's like, fuck, yeah, you guys.
She doesn't like tell them anything. We know that they're not like the nicest people to her. We totally get that.
They're very not the nicest people to her, because they talk about how she's getting older and she might be able to go like back with her mom. And the stepdad, Boyd, is like, what the fuck? How are the fuck are we going to make up the $300 a month? Yeah. And then Boyd does something later to her that you're like, scene, you should not be a foster parent.
That scene was wild.
But I just did think it was funny that, like, she's like terrorized by them. They pull a whole bunch of screen because they call her and they are like, what's your favorite scary movie? Yeah.
And then they do that.
And then they're like, that's a nice red towel, like showing that they're like watching her. And Zachary Ty Bryan then pulls out brass fucking knuckles to try to I don't know.
Yeah. He's a piece of shit. But my favorite is they totally make it obvious who they are when they're like, you leave my boy alone.
that was so cool. And hang up on her.
Yeah, they call her again. You leave my boy alone. And then I'm like, what? This whole part of the movie loses me. Like, the whole middle part leading up to, all except the one scene in the department store. I actually find, like, fuck it, who ca- like, a lot of it to be kind of filler and boring. You know, totally. Like, she obviously believes Jesse's a part of it, but then she finds out that he's not. Tracy's really pissed off. It's just, like, building a lot of, like, drama that I'm not invested in, right? Trying to plan to get her back. So, you know, Jesse, like, asks her to go out with her, right? And so she's at the department store when Monica shows up. And Monica's just like, hi. And then she, like, no, you know, like, because she's, like, grunge and gothy and different, the people are like,
well, because at this point, well, at this point, they already know that they're setting her up to go, because Mark gives Jesse his, like, parents, like, cabin's key, and he's like, you can go do this. So, like, all of the other, like, quote-unquote popular kids are conniving, and Monica's like, I've already said my line about Rachel being caviar or being cheese whiz and Tracy's caviar, so now I'm gonna completely just get involved in shit that has nothing to do with me. And yeah. They're all conniving. They're planning the revenge porn aspect that we're gonna see later.
Yeah,
this is some bored fucking white kids.
This is just
what happens when you put a bunch of white kids with money in an area with nothing to fucking do.
Yeah, So like that's essentially the crux of it. It is eventful, but not super eventful. This whole entire part, I do think it's eventful to kind of go into the party, right? Okay, real quick, I do want to say when she comes home from getting fucked. I get kind of lost. There's a lot that kind of happens towards the end, right? Sue Snell, like, already tells Rachel that she is, you know, Carrie White's sister, and she, like, storms off. She doesn't want to hear it. Whatever. So she knows about it. But anyway, she goes to this party. Jesse isn't there. Tracy's trying to seduce him. They're all trying to separate them so they can fuck with Rachel. At the same time, Sue Snell gets Rachel's mom out of the fucking sanatorium.
How?
Right? How? And then she's like, we're going to go find Rachel. What? She's going to believe it from you because your daughter is psychic. She has an affliction. She has a disorder.
Oh, God. They should have just, like, left the mom there, and Sue Snell should have gone by herself. Oh my God. Or something.
They should have killed the mom off. Why? She doesn't need to be there. And then they find out some other way. Like, this is the most not good character, right? Like, she makes no sense. So anyway, the party. This is where the movie won me a bit. Is the party.
Yes. So she walks into the party. Backstory. So there's, like, a football game. Tracy distracts. She, like, vandalizes Jesse's car so that she can distract him and then take him back to her house, and she tries to seduce him. All of the guys, though, have literally become skinhead Nazis.
Yeah, they shaved their heads.
And they're like, okay, well, we're going to have this party at this house. And this party was so reminiscent of the parties that I went to in high school.
Yeah.
This one had way more of, like, a light plot.
Yeah.
Like, there were definitely light systems that were not present, but
yeah,
just a really nice house. And she walks in and, like, but I... On their way to the party, I do want to say, going back to Monica, Monica's driving, and she has this, like, minion best friend that's sitting there.
Oh, yeah,
Monica's changing. And then she's like, Monica's such a bitch, because she's like, lipstick, like, give me the, like, having her help. And then she changes her dress while she's driving. And then she tells Rachel, like, oh, or Rachel's like, you look really pretty. And she's like, oh, that lipstick color looks great on you. And then Monica or the girl in the passenger seat says something. And she's like, she says something like, you need lipstick or something really fucking cunty to her. And I love Monica so much.
Monica is a, like, the little that they
she's
read
a vibe.
About, she is. She's a mood. She's a mood. But the party, everyone at first is playing nice with Rachel, dancing with her and like twirling her around. And she's like, oh my God.
And then, that song that they're playing, it's like 13 Cats or something like that. It's just the fact that they have this like swing music going on. I love that vibe because like it's also so sad because at this point the audience knows that they're fucking with Rachel, that they're planning something. We don't know what they're planning. We don't know what they've done, but we know it has something to do with the night that they had sex, but we know that there's something going on. But everyone is being fake as shit to her. And you already know, one, this is a Carrie movie, so there's going to be there's going to be a prom scene. You know that they've done something and they're planning something. So there is this anxiety building. And then you also just see them be so nice to her that it's hard to watch because you're like, girl, like, they're this is the moment of the nice. Like, behind you.
Yeah, because you're like, girl, they're being so overly. They don't know who you are. They're going out of their way to be nice to you and make you the center of attention. Something bad. And it keeps like going crazy and crazy. And then they're getting the movie and they're getting everything ready. And she's like, ah. And then they play the.
And she thinks she's finally being accepted, which is so heartbreaking because they apologize to her.
Yeah.
And then she's like, well, as long as you pour me a drink, like, we're fine. And then they're like dancing with her and she's having a good time. And like, it's that part is so heartbreaking. And that's what I think this film does well, because it gives enough for her to snap. Because of what just happens.
Exactly. And when she snaps, it's good. So they piss her off. She's seeing everyone. So the movie comes on and then they show her that she was just Jesse's number, even though it was fake. Like, they wrote it.
It was a point system.
Yeah, they wrote it to tear her down. And all the girls, like, Monica's just like, wah! In her face, like screaming at her.
Monica says, she's so scared. Skanky.
Yeah, so skanky. And then her tattoo starts to beat, which is wild.
Before the tattoo, we really need to talk about one of the big issues that they do is they broadcast a video of her losing her fucking virginity across everyone. And that's what makes her fall to the floor. And then when they pull her up, and then that heart tattoo starts meeting, and I'll let you take it from there.
And, well, it's like a heart with barbed wire, and the barbed wire goes all, it's just like the tattoo grows all the way and wraps around her.
You have to admit, I know this is the 90s. I know, like, you didn't like the tattoo and everything. That whole thing about it growing on her face and just that look and her turning around is fucking sick. I loved it.
It doesn't go with her psychic powers.
I know, but I'm just saying visually. No, I just think it's
visually.
It's a
cool.
It's a moment. It's a vibe.
It's a vibe. It's a moment. It's definitely of the era. Like, because something else, there were other things that did stuff like this, not the tattoo, but like that look. And they were able to get the same thing with the tattoo, right? And it's like, okay, it's like seeping through. And then shutters start to close, doors start to close, things start to shatter, things break, and people fucking die hard.
Do you want to know what my favorite death in this whole movie
Which
is?
Which one?
Can you guess? Is when the CDs fly
yes.
and they hit that girl.
It's Monica's friend, right? It's Monica's friend.
And then there's another, because things start on fire, and then there's,
catch on fire.
There's this one girl who's running around, she's like, put me out, put me out. That is literally a line. Yeah. She goes, put me out. But that's after a very unfortunate death. The most pointless and heartbreaking
death. Doesn't make any sense. Because everyone's trying to escape. And it's Sue. Sue comes in. She hears people screaming. And she puts her head against the door. And a spear spear gun floats and shoots the guy that's trying to get out of the door. And it goes through his head and through Sue's head.
It's so anticlimactic, and that's like when earlier when we were hinting about like how they did Sue dirty. It's like do that to the mom, do that to someone else. Like Sue is the surrogate for Miss. Well, in the book, it's Miss Desjardins, but in the movie, it's Miss Collins. No good deed goes unpunished, I guess, right?
Yeah, no good. Yeah, and that's kind of the point of both, right? No good deed goes unpunished. And so,
but
I will say, my favorite death, you don't see it as a death, but it's supposed to be a death. The castration.
Okay, yes. So, actually, right before that happens, a little fun fact I want to throw at you. What? So, there's a part with, like, the glass where it's before the doors are shut. It's actually kind of early on in her, like, vengeance scene.
When it bursts?
All the glass shatters behind her. Yeah. They had to do that, like, multiple times. And Emily Bergel is actually there. And that's why her face looks a little funny, because she had to keep her eyes open. And she got cut the fuck up doing it. And she had to, like, hold that pose to be able to do it for that glass to like shatter behind her. I love her acting in this whole thing. And yeah, she definitely slinks around when she starts walking. And that when she's walking through the hallway and it goes black and white for that one moment, I love that shot.
Yeah.
Like there's that's cool, it's very music video. Yeah. This is the music video part of the movie.
There's some cool shots here. 100%. I mean, I feel like this movie was made for the trailer more than anything, right? They made the trailer and they're like, I guess we have to build a movie around this.
But let's talk about that dick getting shot off.
Well, first, one of the cool things, Monica's glasses shatter and all the shards go into her eyes and she's like, ah, and
would that kill her? No.
But she, you know, and so she's holding a spear gun herself, and then she, throws a tantrum and shoots fucking ZTB in the nuts. And you see it go past it, pulling out a big chunk of meat, like by testicles, by dick, into the pool. And he's like, oh.
So he was hung. No wonder Lisa was excited to have lunch with him the next day.
For real. She's like, that's a lot of beef. That's too much meat.
Well, and it went in the pool. And then skinhead Mark, he shoots her with the flare gun.
Yeah.
Because her mom shows up and she sees her mom. And then they have a pool with a cover. And the pool cover somehow knocks him out.
Yeah.
She falls under. Because she's been shot by a flare gun.
He drowns. Like, he ultimately drowns, right? And she gets out, and she goes to her mom.
And her mom tells her she's, like, the devil, and she's evil, and runs away. Is this the line that you really hated that she delivers?
Mama? I thought this was bad. it's just a poorly written line. This was bad. I thought the line that I did not like was when she sneaks home after having sex and her stepdad's like, where were you? And slaps her across the face, tells her she's grounded, and she goes, I need to go to the, but there's a baseball game. The way she says it reminds me of the way she said it, just her face, her posture, the sound of her voice, the way it comes out, reminds me of the episode in the movie Superstar. When Mary Catherine Gallagher's talking to her grandma and she's like, she's like quoting something. She's like, yeah, but everybody knows that. She like, it just like comes out. Her grandma's like, get a hold of yourself. She does the exact same thing in this. It is so funny. Oh, I was like, I hate it because it's not meant to come off that way, but it's so fucking hilarious. thought it was funny. But yeah, that, you know, Jesse comes by and she thinks that he lied to her, but then she sees in the video. Okay, he says, "I love you," and then in the movie, in the video,
okay,
it's "I love you." She can hear it from where she's at with all the explosions, and then her psychic powers keep rewinding it over and over and over.
But also, the more time that they rewind it and zoom in, you see his lack of expression, and he's laying in bed, and he's just like, "I love you."
Yeah,
it sounds more and more robotic. And like,
exactly,
not genuine at all. The more times we see it, and then a roof falls. She pushes him out of the way, and then she suddenly dies.
She's dead, and that's all she wrote.
And then the next year,
a year later,
they go to King's University for Stephen King.
Oh, that's.
If that wasn't ham-fisted.
And he has her dog. So the dog's safe. Thank God.
How did he... Well, yeah. I don't know. The dog lived.
And he fantasizes about her, and she's like, comes in, she shows up, and then she shatters in the most CGI glass shattering I have ever seen.
It's so awful. The shot of the thorn veins and everything looks so good.
Yeah.
Like, visually, it looks so good. Yep. And then you have that, but you want to know what's worse? There's an alternate ending where she shows up and she shoots like a snake, and a snake goes into his mouth, and it's even, well, I wouldn't say it's just as bad.
Oh, God. That is
The Rage.
Carry to
Dose.
Yep.
Duh.
Oh, God. Okay.
All right, Pablo. So I have to ask you. That's your anal, sis.
All right. I'll say this. This movie is incredibly poignant for things that are happening now, right? Especially, we're not, you know, like with the reckoning of male toxicity and the Me Too movement and people really examining boy behavior and the, you know, toxic boy behavior. I think that this movie is a movie that is now relevant again. For the messaging, for punishing the monsters, it's still in the 90s lens, so there's still certain things like slut shaming and all that stuff in it, and you know, whatever. But also, there are no people of color in this film.
None.
Like, not even like extras. Oh no, there's two extras in a diner. That's it. But I think it's pretty poignant. So it's actually a film that I could say people can watch, and it makes sense, right? Like the rage, no pun intended, the rage makes a lot of sense. And I think that's something pretty smart about the film, in that they took something that was, you know, the, what were they called? Spumoni posse?
Spur posse.
Spur posse. Yeah. Oh yeah. The
Spumoni posse.
The Spur Posse, which you know, something that big and that culturally relevant is going to make waves throughout later on. And so I think that's a pretty smart move on the writer's parts. So in my analysis of it being a very topical film, a very, you know, interesting film in that sense, and it touches on really important things to touch on. They didn't have the language in 1999 for revenge porn or anything, and sexual assault and consent and all that stuff. So that's pretty apparent. However, I think the topic is a good one. Like, the story would have been really awesome had it been written a little differently. But what's yours? What's your anal, Sith?
I mean, I agree with everything you just said. I think that, like, the way I look at this is, I think that this movie, the only thing I can really describe it as is like a music video. The whole movie is just, it's like a long form 90s alternative rock music video telling the story of some tragedy of a girl
who
this is
was
the story who, of a girl who cried a river and drowned the whole world.
I love that song.
She looks so sad in photographs.
But no, but about, like, you know, the story of a girl who's, like, been bullied, mm-hmm. had a shitty life. She was treated bad. Like, it feels like a long form music video.
Yeah.
There are so I think you and I disagree a little bit, which is fine. I actually really enjoy Emily Bergel's performance with this. I don't think that I think that she does the best with what she can.
Yeah, for sure.
And there were reshoots, but. And also I agree with you, this is very topical, unfortunately, today.
Yeah.
Like, bullying is still a huge thing. It's just now a lot of it's done online. And we have sexual assault and the, like, virginity, like, or the purity movement, like, all of that. That whole virginity is a construct thing. I mean, all of this is still so prevalent today. So it tackles a lot of themes. It just, none of them have been left in the oven very long.
Mm-mm.
Like, everything is very half baked in a lot of this. And I feel like I do wonder if this may have been better served not as a Carrie remake. She could have still had supernatural, she could have had superpowers and whatever. Yeah. And I'm sure maybe they would have been like, well, everyone's just going to say this is Carrie, Carrie sequel without us having the name on it. So, of course, we have to make
Carrie ripoff, which is what they didn't want.
Exactly. But I don't know. I feel like there's so much here, and I feel like it's a very talented cast. I mean, even Zachary Ty Bryan, he does a great job. Like, all of the actors, I actually think do a really good job. Most of them do a really good Zachary Ty Bryan. I would not say he's not someone I would say is a thespian, but in this role,
yeah.
He plays that protected, you know, how are we going to ruin this boy's reputation when
he fits that really
he
well.
Plays that. Yes. So, like,
he,
I think the,
he just loves
the,
it. So.
No, he does. Well,
more
yeah.
than anybody else in this film, he really looks it.
But ultimately, what it comes down to is, I do think, heavy themes aside, this movie's just, I think this movie's fun. I think it's 90s candy.
Heavy themes aside, I think this movie's fun. That's a great quote.
Well, that's how I feel.
Yeah. All right, that was great. Now, my next question to you, Paul, is, who you stabbing?
I really had to search through IMDb for this. I'm actually going to choose non-related Clint Jordan, the sheriff, in the beginning. I found him to be hot. He's who I'm stabbing because I don't feel comfortable saying anyone else in this film.
You fucking bitch.
How about you?
No, exact same person. Exact same person. The sheriff.
Oh, well, perfect.
All right, for the gay gays, here at Scared Gay, we have a system to review how accessible this film is to a gay audience. We're going to be looking at three things: queer representation. Is the queer experience represented within the film, whether it's with the writers or the actors or the characters or just anyone involved in the film? Queer aesthetic. Does the film understand the wants, needs, and language of a queer audience? Can it speak to us? And then queer embrace. Ultimately, has a queer audience embraced this film? Paul, where do you land on this?
I think this movie can very much be embraced by a gay audience because of the bullying aspect, because all of us have been bullied. Or I shouldn't say all of us, but a lot of queer people can relate to the bully, the otherness, the outsiderness,
yeah.
The torment of, you know, quote unquote popular kids. So for that, I can, and then I am going to be honest, we've all thought about what it would be like to get back at your bullies. So for that, like, that's really the only parallel I can make.
Okay.
So how about you?
I would say similarly, I wouldn't call it a queer film, but I would say it's queer adjacent because it deals with some of the topics that us as queer people face, like school bullying. We all remember what it was like to have guys like this really kind of intimidate us and scare us. And also guys like this, if you are female bodied, like prey on you, right? That's something. And then just to be able to have the retribution of seeing them die and suffer, right? And seeing them die and suffer in their manhood with the castration, right? So that there's something really like, it's unfortunate, like, you know, I don't condone violence towards anyone, but it's one of those, like, it scratches that itch that we have from kind of feeling so helpless and distressed when we were younger. So even though it does deal with that, and like, it's definitely like a, you know, a Daria and Jane type of friendship with like Mina Suvari's character and Rachel. And you know, we have like this girl who for all intents and purposes would be a badass chick, but then they kind of write her to try to just, you know, like, I don't know. They turn it around. There's a little bit there, but it's not necessarily reaching to me like queer icon status. Unfortunately, the most queer icon in this is Monica.
Love her.
Yeah, same. Monica's great. But yeah, I wouldn't call it, I wouldn't say it's for the queer gays, for the gay gays, but I would say it's adjacent, right? It's
agreed.
You're checking out the guy, but his best friend's also shirtless next to him.
100.
Right.
All right. So next, travel, host, or ghost. We have a hookup-inspired rating system here. It's simple and split into three categories. Travel, you are going out of your way to get with this movie, A+. Host, good enough, pleasurable, but you're not going out of your way to get with this movie. Ghost, hard pass, not memorable, and we'd likely only revisit in a moment of desperation.
Okay.
Pablo. Okay. Are you travel, host, or ghost?
Okay. So for this film, honestly, I would travel as far away from this film as possible to ghost the fuck out of it. The most hardcore ghost ever. Like leaving the town, the county, the state, the everything. I did not like this film. It is a hard pass. There are moments because this film was so hard for me to even get into, and I really wanted to, and I was like, there are moments that I found it really boring. There are moments I was like, the writing sucks, some of the acting isn't the best, but I think it's really just bad writing. What the fuck is up with the editing and the fucking like cinematography? And then ultimately, like, I think it took itself way too seriously. I think this movie took itself way too fucking seriously, and that's why it failed. But it had something. It has something to it. You can work with it. What about you, Paul?
Because I am garbage. I'm going to say travel for this, just because I think this is always going to be in my rotation of movies I can watch. I like, there's a nostalgia factor to it, I think, for me. I do not think this is a good film. film. But from a rewatchability standpoint, I can watch this movie and still be entertained.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Cool. I get it. Well, that was The Rage Carrie 2.
Ooh.
Thank you for joining us and, you know, going on this ride with us. If you want to follow us on Instagram or TikTok, we are at Scared Gay Pod. If you want to follow
Cast.
Oh, we're podcast for both?
On Instagram and TikTok, at Scared Gay Podcast.
Well, then listen to Paul. Paul is right. Oh my God. I messed that up. I'm embarrassed. I'm hiding.
And you run our social media.
I do. I run it so I don't always see it. And sometimes I have to be like, what's my social media handle again? But yes, my social media handle. I am on Instagram at TheExorcistSF and on TikTok at Exorcist83. What about you, Paul? How can they get a hold of you? How can Bill Murr send you sexy jockstrap pics?
My phone number is 916. I'm just kidding. No, on Instagram and TikTok, I am at Paul You Ever Wanted.
Ooh, I like that. All right, please leave us a 5-star review. If you do leave us a 5-star review, we will be reading it online, just like we did to Bill Murray's. So for the next episode, please. This film has infamy in the sense that I'm like, okay, let's see what you think of it. You don't have nostalgia towards this film. The film is 2017's classic Bye Bye Man.
Okay. I don't know anything about it.
Yeah, so. I haven't watched it because I haven't.
I know Bye Bye Birdie. Right.
And I've been told, don't fucking watch it. It's so dumb. So I was like, what film would have something like that that I think Paul could try to enjoy? And they have very similar.
Wait, your whole point was to pick something you think I'll
no,
hate.
No. Could try to enjoy but can't. And that frustrates you. That's my favorite. When you're like, I wanted to like this film so fucking much, but it fucking sucks. And that's what I'm hoping. I hope this film delivers that.
I am too. I'm very excited and nervous.
And reading about it, it has elements of things that like I'm like, Paul typically likes some of this stuff, but it's also like it apparently has shit itself so bad, and it just reminds me so much of Sinister, where it's like, fuck, it would have been so good. Right?
It was almost there. Almost? You were so fucking close.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Remember, stay scared, stay safe, and maybe get a little gay. I'm Pablo.
And I'm Paul.
Bye.
Bye.